existential shopping. Everything in the world knows its place. Birds know to fly. Rocks know to stand still. Only I wander through Gristides, uncertain about yogurt. Five shoes. I brought five shoes with me to Europe. Why five? Because one of them doubles as a shaving kit.
Hi, I'm Jack Shalom. Sparrow is a longtime poet, activist, and musician hailing from Manhattan. He's published several poetry collections with Soft Skull Press, and he has served as the editor for the literary journal Big Fish. He's been published in The New Yorker after picketing their offices in 1995 with a group of writers called The Unbearables. He's been published also in The Quarterly and The New York Times. He was also featured in the PBS series The United States of Poetry, and he's a regular contributor to Sun Magazine. Sparrow has been called one of the funniest men in Manhattan by music critic Robert Christgau. Welcome, Sparrow.
Oh, hi. Nice to meet you all.
I first met you as a student in your poetry writing class, and you called your class at that time, your writing class, Poetry Conscious Writing Class. Why that title?
I have no idea. First of all, I think it's impossible to teach writing. I think it's impossible to teach poetry. It may be impossible in a certain sense to teach anything. What I'm trying to do is kind of play around with the minds of my students and of myself. I just want to sort of entertain myself, and what seems to entertain me is thinking of new ways to use my mind that I never thought of before.
Well, one of the things that I really appreciated about your class were the homework assignments. For example, one homework assignment was listen to a bird sing, write down exactly how the bird sounds, transliterate its call in letters. And you often include a poem with your emails. I brought along a couple, so if you wouldn't mind reading them.
Buddhist lesson. Studying clouds, I forgot the sun. Starry night. Gazing up, I count each star twice. 1-1, 2-2, 3-3, 4-4, 5-5, 6-6.
Did you always know you would be a poet? Have you always written poetry?
I started writing poetry in fifth grade. Actually, I had an epiphany. I ordered a book from Junior Scholastics for 50 cents, and I still have it. I think in my parents' house or somewhere. And I read that poem by William Carlos Williams. I think it's called The Red Wheelbarrow. So much depends upon a red wheelbarrow glazed with rainwater beside the white chickens. I was so astonished by this poem. I just thought, I never knew there was such a thing as such a brilliant poem. And soon after that, I started writing poems. So this was fifth grade.
Did you have any teachers that encouraged you?
There was a guy named Mr. Gordon in junior high. But I've had very few helpful teachers. I've studied with a lot of famous poets, mostly kind of beat, bohemian-type poets. And mostly they've just been merciless to me. Somebody told me where William Burroughs was staying, like what his apartment was. And I gathered up my courage. I gathered up seven of my hippie poems, and I took these poems to William Burroughs, showed them to him. He read my poems, then he looked up at me and drawled, "Well, you seem to have something to say." So pretty much no one has ever helped me much.
Let's listen to some of your poetry here.
Historical view. My phone is dead, and I am alive. Someday our roles will be reversed. Today I ate the briefest orange. Anarchist Manifesto. Copyright my poems? I'm hoping someone will steal them. Universal Box. I have invented the Universal Box. It can expand or contract according to one's needs. It can be the size of a molecule or a continent. What's it made of? Diplethanine.
What's the most important thing you know about poetry?
Poetry is all about sound. It has nothing to do with meaning. That's the biggest misunderstanding about people. People think it's about words, but it really has nothing to do with words. It has to do with this kind of music that is, it happens to be expressed through words. If you just listen to it, just have someone go into the next room and recite the poems and listen so that you can't hear the words, just the murmuring sounds, you'll be struck, I hope, by the incredible power of these sounds. It's a sonic power that's mastered for the purpose of changing your life.
Have you seen your approach to poetry change over the years?
A lot. I got carpal tunnel syndrome in 1998, and I decided to stop being a writer. And so, anyway, I got this carpal tunnel syndrome, and I just thought, that's it. I'm quitting. The hell with it. I'm not going to be a writer of any kind. I'm going to lie in bed in the mornings and then have lunch with my friends. I'm going to be a bohemian loser. That was my goal. So that day, I lay in bed, and I lay there, and while I was lying there, I thought of a poem. So then I went to my tape recorder, and I spoke it into my tape recorder. And eventually, they invented a voice-activated computer, and now I do the same thing, but I do it with a computer.
Is there a price to pay for that?
There's a price to pay for everything. I mean, for one thing, I consider myself a Marxist or something like a Marxist, so I'm deeply ashamed that I don't have a job.
How disciplined are you with your writing?
I wake up in the morning, and I do not speak to anyone until 12:01 p.m., in other words, till 1 minute after noon. So the whole morning, I do not speak. Then I turn on my computer and speak it into my computer. So I do that, let's say, for 20 minutes, and then the rest of the morning, I edit my essays, generally essays. Mm-hmm. Then, after 12:01, there's certain other types of writing that I'm allowed to do that are more like commercial writing.
What do you see as some themes that run through your writing?
Every 4 years, I'm thinking about being an American, what it feels like to be an American, my immense conflicts living here, because here is America. America has no culture that I can find. I mean, as far as I can see, it's just a bunch of middle-aged guys playing Simon and Garfunkel songs over and over again for each other. And worse, writing new songs that are infinitely worse than Simon and Garfunkel songs.
In 1996, you ran as a Republican challenging Robert Dole, remember Bob Dole, for the party's nomination, and you even wrote a book about it, Republican Like Me. Since then, every four years, you've run for president. So I was wondering if you might have a big announcement, a big scoop that you could let in the Arts Express listeners into.
Well, okay, I'll do it. I'll run for president right now. I wasn't certain.
I wasn't going to do this, but
since you suggested it, all right, I'll do it. I'll run for president. You talk me into it. For the seventh time, this could be the charm for me, because if Donald Trump can be president, I could be emperor. And I feel like he's very funny. He's very insane, but I've got him beat in both areas.
Just one moment. We're just going to cut to you reading your poem, Why I Can Beat Bob Dole.
Why I Can Beat Bob Dole. I can beat Bob Dole because anyone can beat Bob Dole. Anyone except Steve Forbes, Lamar Alexander, Pat Buchanan, Alan Keyes, and Richard Lugar. In a bizarre twist of fate, the only five people on earth who cannot beat Bob Dole have run against him. So here I point to an audience member. You, for example, could beat Bob Dole easily. Here, I point to another audience member. You could beat Bob Dole by a landslide. Here, I point to a third audience member. And you, if you chose to run against Bob Dole, could reduce him to vomiting and tears. Now I point to all three audience members. But you, you, and you are not running against Bob Dole, to my knowledge, and I am. That is the difference between us. Some humans look at the possible and say, that is too easy. Then they look at the impossible and say, that is too hard. But I am different. I say, do the possible, then do the impossible, then do the unthinkable, the unimaginable, the unspeakable, the unchristian. Bob Dole wants to make this country great again, but I say no. This country has tried being great, and it has failed. I want to make this country small, embarrassed, slightly befuddled. I want this country to hum to itself as it cleans its glasses. I want this country to try hopelessly to learn to play the tuba. I want this country to watch Jeopardy every day and get most of the answers right. I want this country to mumble, to be shy, to give a limp handshake, to go days without combing its hair, to have bad breath. I want this country to smile again awkwardly while carrying a book. And I will beat that jerk Dole with his war stories and his courage. Who needs courage? Courage is for cowards. I have something greater than courage. I am a failure.
I've read from one of your prior runs that you stated, I've run for president 5 times. Each time I've begged the American people not to vote for me. Each time they have cooperated. In this sense, I'm the most successful candidate in history. So I think that's a really good summary of your strategy. I was going to ask you to play a little bit with me here. I'm going to throw out words one at a time for you to respond to, okay?
Okay,
so just for fun.
Okay.
Television.
Television is the best way to live without being alive.
Love.
Impossible. The best thing is to give up on love and just sit still for about 3 or 4 years. And then you'll notice that, look at us. We're surrounded by these plants, these birds. They all love us. They also are indifferent to us. A lot of love is indifference, and a lot of indifference is love. That is the deepest thing I will ever explain to anyone on the radio.
Soupy Sales.
Ha ha! Soupy Sales. I hate the word genius, but I'm tempted to call him a genius. I lie in bed thinking about Soupy Sales.
Last one. Tell us about death.
Ha ha ha! I find death terrifying. I am completely terrified. I would live forever, no matter what. You know, in a mailbox, you know, if just it was like one finger was alive. I mean, I'm terrified. I mean, I wish there was no death. It's really, it was a big mistake, whoever invented the universe.
I thought I read in one of your Sun articles recently,
that
recently, about a year ago, you said you didn't believe in God anymore.
It's like having an abusive boyfriend that you go back to all the time. You know, it's like, oh, I really love you. I really care about you. But every 6 months, I just have to go away for a while. You know, I have important business. I can't really tell you what it is. And it's like, I just decided, all right, that's it. I'm quitting. I'm quitting this addiction. So I'm not saying there's no God. I'm not saying I don't believe in God. I'm just saying I'm sick of it. I'm sick of that whole question. So I'm trying, that's what I think I'm kind of working on now, is trying to find some way to have love without having a lover, without having a recipient, without inventing some character that is the recipient of my love.
So how can we hear more of you or read more of you? I understand you're on Twitter.
Actually, I think anybody can go to my Facebook site. I think it's public. It's I Am Sparrow, I-A-M. My first name is I Am, one word, I-A-M Sparrow. There's a bunch of I Am Sparrows, but I'm the only one that looks like an old man with a white beard and lives in Phoenicia, New York. And I think on Twitter I'm Sparrow at Sparrow14. And thesunmagazine.org.
Can you leave us with a final homework assignment?
Spend an hour looking at your feet, but with your socks off, shoes off, and then write a poem about anything but your feet.
I'm gonna close with a quote from Richard Wright. All right, you sparrows, the sun has set, and you can now stop your chattering. Thanks very much, Sparrow. Jack Shalom for Arts Express
thank
with
you,
host Prairie you. Miller.
And thank you. The sad truth. If you hate this poem, it won't affect my reputation.